everybody, to the Total Soccer Show. My name is Taylor Rockwell. With me today to preview the U.S. Women's National Team ahead of their first game at the Olympics is Jordan Angeli. Jordan, good to have you back.
Yeah, thanks for having me, Taylor. Yeah, this will be fun. A lot to talk about.
I think you're in the same sort of position that we've been in, that I'm in right now, of like, there have been so many tournaments, different competitions going on, that it's then like, oh, the Olympics are here. Better get ready for that. Like, my notes for when the Gold Cup started were basically just like, oh, and now the Gold Cup begins. And it was that quick of a transition. Do you feel like, honestly, do you feel like you are ready for the Olympics to begin? Because I don't think I am.
No.
I don't think I'm in that sort of like a big tournament is starting mode quite yet.
No, and that's the thing, because the Olympics, like, it starts and then it ends. It's so
right?
quick. So if I'm not ready now, I have, what, a few hours to get ready? I think it's weird, too, because like the Euros, you know, it was a tournament that we expected to happen last year. And so it feels, I think, strange and like a little bit of our rhythm that it's happening now. It's like, wait, it is happening. Are we calling this the 2020 Olympics, like the 2020
yep.
Euros? Which every time I was like, why don't we just change it?
I'm right there with you.
Yeah,
I'm right there with you.
That was strange. But yeah, here we are, and it's going to happen, which is, I think, very exciting in the grand scheme of things that these players get to compete, because that's the dream, right? Gosh, I just can only imagine competing for your country in Olympics. So I'm happy they had this opportunity.
Mm-hmm. And I want to get to the squad and sort of our expectations for it in a second, but you mentioned that it was supposed to happen last year, and I think that also has created, at least for me, a strange confusion around this team, because I think if it happens last summer, it would have been the send-off tournament for a lot of the big names. Then head coach Vlatko Andonovski probably starts that rebuild. We get younger players coming in more regularly and getting more regular minutes. COVID pushes things back a year. That process is delayed. Now it's been 2 years since the World Cup. There aren't that many new names in this team. Does that sort of factor into your enthusiasm at all? Like, would you have liked to see a sort of younger team at this point, or are you okay with where things are, given how things have been?
I think so you're saying like Carly Lloyd, potentially Megan Rapinoe. Who else would you add to that group?
I think, well, some of them have, I think, been like sort of left off to start, because I think like Ashlyn Harris and Allie Krieger would probably
right. yep.
be in that
yep.
list.
Yeah. Okay,
I don't know.
That's true.
Yeah, I think it's probably Carly Lloyd, and it would have been Alex Morgan, I think, probably because of pregnancy and still recovering.
Yes.
Maybe she would have made it in time.
Right.
But even then, that's not necessarily a like send off. I think it's just that we have so many young players coming through in my mind
Absolutely.
Who did end up eventually making the roster, and we'll talk about why that was the case. But it just seems like we're sort of in this strange limbo period.
Yeah.
It's basically that same World Cup team and then a few new names, but not as many as might have been expected.
Yeah, and I just asked that question because I just in my brain and just watching some of these players and what they've continued to do at older ages, like I think last year maybe we would have thought this was Carly Lloyd's last tournament, but like now I just don't actually know. She just continues to believe in herself and not put any limitations on what she is able to accomplish. And I think that's really inspiring for a lot of people. And got to chat with her on the U.S. Soccer Podcast a couple months ago now. And it was just really cool to hear her point of view and her perspective and where she's at in her life. I don't know. Maybe this will be her last tournament. Would it have been last year? Potentially, because she might not have had the time during the break to really evaluate things that were going on in her life. So it's interesting. I do think that what the rhythm we've gotten in is, you know, the World Cup happens the year after it's the Olympics, and it's this really, really difficult challenge to win the World Cup and then win the Olympics. It hasn't been done. And this is, you know, going into last year, everybody said, well, if anybody could do it, it's this team. And I believe that. But I do think that this year, having maybe a little bit of a break with COVID and having time off of playing some games allowed some players to rest that maybe they wouldn't have had that rest going into Olympics and trying to push their bodies to the limits. Maybe now that they're at a better place going into this year's Olympics. But I still do think, man, you look at this squad and it is ridiculous. I'm not too mad that some of these players are on there. But you said it. There are so many good players up and coming, and some of them got to make the trip, and some of them got named to the squad, and eventually the alternates become a member of the squad, which is another big thing. But there's some new faces, but man, there are some tried and true veterans who you want on your team when it comes to a big tournament.
Most definitely. And you have those tried and true veterans playing in a pretty tried and true formation and approach for people who are new to the team. What would you say is that style and approach? I'm assuming we're going to get that 4-3-3 shape. Mm-hmm. What else can people be looking for when the U.S. Goes out against Sweden?
Yeah, the 4-3-3, Vlatko has done some interesting things with it. And what I've really liked is his ability to move the midfielders into some wider positions. I think Lindsey Horan is a good example of that. Sam Mewis does it on occasion too. I would say she typically stays a little bit more central, but the rotations of bringing one of the two players in front of the six. So they play with really kind of two eights, and Julie Ertz typically starts in that six spot. We'll see where she is at with, she had an MCL injury in May. So if she's starting in that spot, it gives freedom for those two players in front of her to really just feel the game. And from there, there is so much creativity that goes forward, because you're then really attacking with five players who are good on the ball, whether it's Lindsey Horan, Sam Mewis, or Rose Lavelle centrally. You have Kristen Press, who's been absolutely on fire. Megan Rapinoe, Tobin Heath now healthy. Taylor, I talk about all those players. I mean, all those players are one, goal scorers, right?
Yep.
And two, they have a feel for the game where they really understand different combinations of, if a player is taking the outside channel, well, I'm going to move centrally. Even if I'm a winger, I'm going to move centrally. Even if I'm outside back, I'm going to move centrally, because I can utilize that space, a la Crystal Dunn. And attack and make it difficult on the opponent to have to shift and defend. So I do think there is a fluidity about their possession going forward, but also a tenacity to say, all right, we see a weakness, we're going to get after it with our creative goal scoring front five.
And who would you say is the least replaceable? Like Julie Ertz having that MCL injury, without her, like she does seem to be the one that is an ever-present fixture in that starting 11.
Yeah.
Is it Julie Ertz, or are there other players who you think are even more indispensable?
Gosh, I think at this point, and she has been one of those players, absolutely, but they've still succeeded without her in the last few games. I would say Becky Sauerbrunn. Is that because if you look at the depth at the center back, not that Tierna Davidson isn't a great player, but Becky has all the experience, right? Now Abby Delkemper is next to her. And there was a good piece by U.S. Soccer. They mic'd her up and at training a few days ago. And you could hear all the communication that Abby Delkemper has with her team. But I do think that there is stability that playing next to Becky Sauerbrunn gives you. It doesn't matter if you're the center back next to her, or Julie Ertz in front of her, or one of her outside backs, right? She is that veteran presence, that captain-like presence on the field. So I would say, because if you go up the field, Taylor, every other position, you know, the number two is really a number one that just didn't get the call that day, right? They're so deep in so many positions that I would say, if something were to happen to Becky and she wasn't able to play, I would say that would be the most irreplaceable. You could slide Julie Ertz back in there, right? She plays that, but with this instability of Ertz and not knowing where she's at with her injury and how many minutes she can give and all that, I don't know. That would be my spot.
I mean, I think that's a solid shout, especially with her being a captain, visible leader, a vocal leader. I'm assuming a locker room leader as well. Actually, speaking of the locker room, one thing we heard about from Jill Ellis's time was that it was a more ruthless one, and maybe the communication wasn't always great. Have you heard much about like the vibe within the team as we prepare for this tournament? Do you expect things to be better, worse, different, the same? Like how do you think things have changed in the way the team is sort of getting along under Vlatko?
Yeah, I think that's I feel like I've talked about locker room before. I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to speak to that when I'm not in that position. But what I would say from my experience and knowing this team and being in that locker room for, you know, training camps, the reason that they're so good is because they teeter on this edge of responsibility and holding others accountable. And so you have to take the responsibility for what you do, but they hold each other accountable too. And they're not afraid to call each other out in not a negative way, but just saying, hey, we got to be better on these things. And their own personal responsibility builds the competitiveness. So when you add all those things together, I do think that there's moments where, maybe from Jill's perspective, it's a little ruthless, but it seems to work and it seems to allow them to perform. It doesn't seem like it's been a hindrance from an outsider's perspective for what they're able to do on the field. It seems like it allows them to continue to up the level, which it just is remarkable how they continue to do that year after year.
So let's get to the roster then, if you would. We normally have it as an 18-player roster, which is cut down from the 23 for official competitions like the World Cup. This time around, it will be 22. The alternates have basically just been added, so you get 22 from the outset, which I think has to be an advantage for the United States because they rolled the dice with, say, Megan Rapinoe last time. That did not work out. They're doing it with Julie Ertz, as you mentioned, with Tobin Heath as well. So it does give you more depth. Do you think that that is a leg up that since the U.S. hasn't had in the past, it does put them in an even more favorable position for this tournament?
Yeah. Just even talking about the setup of this tournament, it's a game, 2 days off and a game. It goes by so quickly. And I know I mentioned that at the beginning of the show. To add in four more players, especially three of them being players that can help you with actual physical minutes on the pitch and take some of that load off of players who maybe you can't overload in the early stages of the tournament. Maybe it's Tobin, maybe it's Julie who are coming back from an injury and you want to make sure that you're getting them enough time, but not overdoing it in the group stage. That is honestly priceless. And I think one of the reasons why this turnaround from the World Cup to the Olympics the following year is so difficult on these women's teams is because unlike the men, right, it's the same, it's the full team that goes. It's not the under 23s.
Right.
It's the team that's in the World Cup then goes to the Olympics. And so not only are you picking from a 23-player roster that for the U.S. just won the Olympics and narrowing it down to 18. So you think about the emotions that come with it when your teammate that you just competed with isn't there anymore. And now, you know, I think you take a lot of those external factors away by bringing in 22 plus the physical attributes that they can bring and carrying some loaded minutes because every single one of these players that was an alternate, I mean, maybe not the goalkeeper, but they will get, I would imagine they're going to get some kind of minutes because, like I said, the depth of this team is just absolutely ridiculous that you could put them in and they can provide stability within a team who has, I feel like they know who they are, they know how to execute, and they trust each other. They trust that all 22 players could come in and do their part.
And as you mentioned, it's game, two-day break, game. That is a pretty rigorous schedule. Does the U.S.'s like preferred style of play favor that a little bit? Because my assumption would be that if you're making the ball do the work, then you maybe are going to be a little bit fresher, a little bit later in more games. If you're a high-pressing, high-tempo team that's running everywhere and everybody's running a marathon by the end of the match, that's harder to do on only two days rest. So where is the U.S.'s sort of strength when it comes to their style, when it comes to this schedule?
I would say, actually, I would actually merge both of those together. I do think they're an advantage because of their possession style. They can get more players forward, and then they do turn those into counter-pressing and high-pressing situations. Hmm. So unlike a team, as you had just mentioned, you know, maybe an opposing team who does rely on a counterattack or high pressing and can get really, really stretched at moments. I feel like there are very few moments when this U.S. team does get stretched from a high pressing situation because they typically come from them building the ball up, creating a good looking attacking sequence. And then if they do lose the ball, they're almost in this, it reminds me of hockey, you know, like when you dump the puck and then like go and counter press or go in, what do they call that? Forecheck. Like they're in this forechecking position where they can then go press all the places they want to win the ball back in a higher spot and then either get to goal or continue to possess higher up on the field. So I do think that, it could lead to them being maybe a little bit more rested as they enter into the later games within the group play, but then eventually, hopefully, the knockout rounds. Because if you think about not just them, but their opponents, if they always have the ball and they're making their opponents do the defensive work, that's just exhausting, not only physically, but mentally as well. So it not only helps them, but it probably hurts the opponents as well.
Today's episode is brought to you by Shopify. On the Total Soccer Show, we often talk about the importance of a manager who can clearly and effectively communicate their tactics and then a squad of players capable of executing that approach, but also adding some individual flair along the way. And that's the same relationship you're getting with Shopify. You tell them how you want things to work or what you need to get done, and they execute the game plan, sometimes even better than you could have expected, with Shopify Magic, their AI-powered all-star. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, from the launch your online shop stage to the first real store stage, all the way to the did we just hit over a million orders stage? Shopify is there to help you grow. From what I've heard from family members who use Shopify for their online store, which has evolved into an amazing brick-and-mortar location, Shopify has helped with that growth, and with every step along the way, they've made it easier to process and track orders, run the business day-to-day, and help with long-term growth as well. So whether you're auctioning autographed jerseys or selling custom stadium prints, both of which are awesome, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, up to 36% compared to other leading commerce platforms. And you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, the aforementioned AI-powered all-star. Shopify powers 10% of all e-commerce in the United States and is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, their extensive help resources are there to support your success every step of the way, because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/TSS. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/TSS now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. One more time, all lowercase. That's shopify.com/TSS. And we do potentially have new listeners to both like soccer and this podcast, or new fans of soccer. And we have some people who maybe aren't as familiar with some of the terminology. We get questions about counter-pressing a lot. And it is one of those things that I think definitely I will say and throw out. There's a few of those like dropping deep. I think people have pointed out like that doesn't actually make as much sense as you might think it does when you first say it. Yeah. Jordan, can you explain for people who might not be as familiar what the idea of counter-pressing is?
Of course. And Taylor, that's one of the things I love about the Total Soccer Show is it is such a great show for no matter if you're new to the game or if you've been watching forever. So if you are new, welcome. And you found the right place for sure, because these guys do the best job. So counterpress is you basically have lost the ball in typically a higher up position on the field, but you recognize that there is an opportunity in those maybe 5, 10, 15 seconds after you lose it to swarm the other team and try to win the ball back immediately after. So you've put yourself in a position that typically you're supported by players that are on your team, that are around you in good attacking positions, that if you do lose the ball, you can almost, we called it when I played, hunt the ball down. You go and hunt the ball and try to win it right back immediately after you lose it. And the key being in that, if you are in a good attacking zone, maybe in the attacking third or edging on that third, middle third to attacking third, you've then put yourself in a position where you can then quickly turn that into an offensive progression. So I think that is how I would explain it.
I would agree. Yeah. I would ask you then, for the U.S., when they implemented, does it tend to be in your mind, is it like individual specific? Are they kind of stepping when one player leads that line? Are there certain triggers, or is it certain ball positions, or does it just tend to be based on the individual opponent and what they're doing or not doing?
I think it's I can't think of a specific trigger for them right now off. Mm-hmm. I'm sure there are, right? And I would imagine with Vlaco and all of the work that he does behind the scenes, there are not only, he doesn't only give the freedom to his players on the field to make those decisions when the game, when it presents itself in the game. But also he's saying, hey, if the ball goes from their right center back to their right outside back, we're going to get after that player because they're not good with the ball at their feet. They tend to try to this pass. So maybe they're not only getting pressure to the outside right back, but they're denying the pass into the front runner because that's typically the pass that she likes to play. So I would say, that's just an example. I'm not saying that is exactly what he's trying to do, but I think it's a mixture between just feeling the game, which this team does well. And, because they are so high energy and, quick and fast and fit that they can high press and transition really quickly, that those counter press opportunities are something that they can just feel. And, if it's not on, you might see a player go, right? Tobin Heath might go and try to go press, but people aren't organized behind her and they might just drop back a little bit and pull Tobin back. So I think it really is, it's a hard thing to say all the exact cues, but this team is good at reading and communicating with each other on the fly and saying, all right, let's go, or let's pull back and let's just get into a little bit more of a block.
Yeah, apologies. I think I asked you like a calculus level tactics like, question against, out of nowhere.
Against Sweden, this is what they will be doing.
If you don't mind, just break it down for me as though you've watched all that same footage.
We're going to talk about that after, right? That's what we'll talk about after.
That's what we'll definitely talk about after. But for people when they're watching, that is the type of thing that I like to kind of pay attention to, is not just what is the U.S. doing in that counter press, but like why are they doing it? Yeah. How are they stepping? Who are they stepping to? Who are they trying to force Sweden into playing into or out of? Because I think then you can see sort of the vulnerabilities they've identified.
Yeah.
But we've talked about the overall team plenty. Let's talk about the individual players and positions for a moment. Let's start in goal. We've got Alyssa Nair, we've got Adriana French, and we've got Jane Campbell. French was maybe a slight surprise as the number two, but aside from that, it's pretty much as we expected. And then Jane Campbell coming in once the alternates became official players. How strong is the U.S. in this department? And maybe more specifically, what would you say are the areas that you think Alyssa Nair is like excels at, that you have no doubt she can handle that? And what are the areas where you think she might have vulnerability or weakness?
Ooh, I think the there was so many questions going into the World Cup about Alyssa Nair and would she be good as Hope Solo? You know, there's that's how we do that, right? As as commentators, just comparing each player. And I think that Alyssa has grown so much over her career and utilized her time in the World Cup to gain confidence. And so I do think that for her, she is stepping into this tournament confident and knowing her abilities. I would say sometimes coming off the line, she's not super confident in being able to close space if she's called to come off the line. I think she is a good shot stopper. She's a great organizer, and she brings an experience to this squad that is crucial when you're talking about a tournament where you are playing quick succession games. And maybe if you're not a good organizer and your team's a little tired, then is that a cause for a breakdown? So I do think that she's really good. And then the other two goalkeepers, you bring in Jane Campbell, and she's been really good historically in NWSL in penalties. So I think that's interesting. And now she joins, alternate. And I don't know, like, I don't know if that'll actually play out, but it's just a really interesting thing to note because of her history with that. And then I really like AD France. She had an injury after the World Cup last year. She had an injury that she came back from. But what I like about her is she has personality and she has a feistiness about her. And she does things in goal. She can make saves that I think will surprise you. So I think overall, this is a really deep goalkeeping threesome. And they all seem to, you know, what's most important is they get along really well too, right? And you're training every day in between those games, and you have to be ready to step up if called upon, but you also have to cheer each other on and make sure Alyssa is in the best place she can be in to perform. And I think those other two can really help her with that.
In defense, we've got Abby Dahlkemper, Tierna Davidson, Crystal Dunn, Kelly O'Hara, Becky Sauerbrunn, Emily Sonnet, and Casey Kruger. No Midge Purse, which was maybe the big omission, the big snub that seemed to get the biggest amount of talking points. Jordan, for you, who do you expect to be maybe your starting four. And second question would be, which player in this list of defenders do you think gives you the most versatility, or is there because of that versatility?
Ooh, okay. Back four, I would say Crystal Dunn, Abby Dahl-Kemper, Becky Sauerbrunn, and Kelly O'Hara. Mm-hmm. Those are my four. Those are some of the best defenders in the world. And then you add in the attacking ability of Crystal Dunn and Kelly O'Hara, and it's like, are they defenders or are they attackers? which is, I think, one of the really secret weapons of this, not so secret, of this U.S. Women's National Team. I would say there is some... The interesting thing when you look at all these players, Taylor, and your second question is, you know, why are they there maybe for their versatility? Well, Emily Sonnet can play outside back, center back, or holding midfielder. Casey Krueger can play outside back. She probably could play center back, but I would say she's a left back, right? She's has the ability to cover that position. And then Crystal Dunn, you know, she can play everywhere on the field. And Tierna Davidson has the center back. She could play outside back. I would say she's better center back, or she could play holding mid. So it's interesting because two of those other players, Tierna Davidson, Emily Sonnet, can really fill in for various positions around the back line and in central midfield. But I like bringing Casey Krueger in. I think she's one of the best 1v1 defenders and has consistently been that in NWSL over the last, 4 years. And I don't know if you remember this, Taylor, before the World Cup, it was actually, that was the big news that she didn't make the team, that Allie Krieger made the team. And it ended up being a good decision, right? Because Krieger played a huge role in that final game. And, you know, you talk about how you, it's not just about filling in a team with how they play on the field, but filling in a roster that has maybe experience in different ways. And I think Krueger brings the experience of just tried and true 1v1 defending. And I know talking to Rory Dames over the years, her head coach at Chicago Red Stars, he is always talking about her ability to defend 1v1. So, and I'm just like, what a story she is. She has torn her ACL 3 times, has continued to fight for, she played abroad and then came back to NWSL and has just been consistent over the last 4 years. Didn't make that World Cup team, now has the Olympics try, like this time at the Olympics. It's just like one of those feel good stories that this is also, isn't it also a reason we watch the Olympics? Like we end up rooting for all these people that we didn't know we were rooting for, but here we are.
3 knee surgeries will definitely have me pulling for her.
Yeah.
Jordan, how many did you have to have, if you don't mind my asking?
Yeah, I also had 3 ACLs, so I also think that's maybe why I have a little soft spot for
her. Was that all the same knee, or was that different knees?
Mine was all the same. Hers is 2-in-1, similar to Megan Rapinoe, who has also had 3 ACLs. I know.
So if you don't mind, I want to stick with that for a second, because I did my right knee once and was sort of resigned to doing it again, because at that time I didn't like stretch, I didn't cool down, I didn't really take care of myself and do pregame stuff that you should probably be doing. Mm-hmm. I've been very fortunate in not tearing it again, but it's always been that like it could happen at any moment, and it is in the back of your mind once it happens. How much more impactful and draining and difficult is it, not even just from a physical pain standpoint, having it happen 3 times, but does it take a mental toll on you? Does it wear on you a little bit, or make you maybe a little bit more cautious than you would be?
Yeah, I think it does for a certain amount of time. And I say that because, you know, I just mentioned 2 players, Casey Krueger, Megan Rapinoe, who have done this multiple times. And I think as you work back into playing after any big injury, but especially multiple knee surgeries, you are a little bit of you feels like, oh gosh, like, all right, mentally, can I do this? Can I continue to ask this of my body? Is that what I want to do? But it seems to me like both of those players have, one, probably really good support staff around them to get them both physically and mentally to the place where those things come up, and then they deal with them, and then they can move forward. And they've both moved forward in a way that where it doesn't look to me anymore like they're thinking about it. And I think that there is a time when you're watching someone coming back from an ACL where it's like, you can tell they're a little cautious about things. And those two don't really have that caution anymore, which gives you just an insight into what they've gone through physically, but also the work they've done mentally to get themselves in a space just to trust their body can do what they ask of it.
And in your experience, did it take more each time to get back to full fitness? Or is it a little bit of, like, I've heard that with, like, hip surgery, that once you have the hip surgery, it's replacing a part and then you kind of function as you normally would. Did you find that to be the case with the knee, or was it a little bit harder each time?
It was harder each, for me personally, it was harder each time. Just because my first two were two in a year. So it was just very difficult to...
You did two in a year?
Yeah, yeah. It was really difficult to understand that my body wasn't going to fail me again. And then after the third one, you know, it, like one of those stories where you're just at the top of the top and you feel like you're flying and then you get injured and you're like, why? And so I think that one... That one for me, I just had to like let go a lot of the things that I thought were going to be of my soccer life. So for me, it definitely was harder each time because you're like, I can get through this the first time. Like I've seen so many people do this. And then the second time you're like, wow, why is this happening to me again? Then the third time I was like, no, like I don't want to do this anymore. So it took a long time for me to be like, all right, maybe I'll do this again. But yeah, mentally, it's very, very difficult. And I think that that's why I've spoken to Casey Krueger on my podcast that I help people through ACL injuries and her mindset about it all and just her ability to continue to have faith in what the plan was for her is really inspiring. And so it's cool to see her get her moment after so many trials and so, you know, getting back and being so consistent. And I think when you talk about the mental game, that's what has probably helped her is her consistency and performance over the last few years with the Chicago Red Stars. So now she's in this spot where she can step into this Olympic roster and really feel confident about who she is as a player and what she can add to this team.
This episode is brought to you by LinkedIn Jobs, who would like to remind you when you're hiring for your small business, you want to find quality professionals that are right for the role. You don't want to end up with Ryan, Graham, and Joe. Just kidding. Just kidding. Very much just kidding. Because I was very fortunate to have the three of them all join the show. And I had existing relationships with all three of them that allowed me to know that they could handle the amount of work that would be required, that they could be diligent in their tasks and be very effective on mic. And all three of them are. But again, that's because you have the existing relationship. If you don't feel like you have that with potential hires, then LinkedIn is going to make it very, very easy, and they're going to make it feel like you're connected to that person. They have a vast network of more than a billion professionals, which makes it the best place to hire because it gives you access to professionals you can't find anywhere else. But when you are setting the requirements and making it very specific as to what you're looking for, you can very quickly narrow it down to find the right candidate for that position. Hiring is easy when you have that many candidates, so easy, in fact, that 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. And LinkedIn is constantly finding ways to make the process easier. They even just launched a feature that helps you write job descriptions, making the process even easier and quicker. 2.5 million small businesses use LinkedIn for hiring, and you can too. Post your job for free at linkedin.com/TSS. That's linkedin.com/TSS to post your job for free. Terms and conditions do apply. Thank you very much to LinkedIn for sponsoring today's episode. All right. I'm now all in on Casey Krueger winning, and I would like her to split the medal with you, Jordan.
Whatever.
Possible. Thank you for sharing that. Because that's really, I always assumed that like, the one would be the worst because you're not used to it. And in reality, now that I think about it, of course it would be worse to tear it a second and even a third time. Because then you do have that. To me, it's like I was fixing our sink, and like the first time you think you fixed it, it leaks. You're like, maybe just a quick little tighten. It's fine. Yeah. And then after like the second or third time, it's it's never going to be fixed again. And I don't know what I'm doing. And I can see how that would take a huge toll. So to credit to you to work your way back multiple times and to have the disposition that you do. And certainly for Megan Rapinoe and for Casey Krueger. All right. I'm all in on the U.S. defense now, but I think we should probably talk about other. Exactly. We should talk about other positions, though, too. Let's talk midfield, where we have two Mewises, the Mui, Sam Mewis, Christy Mewis. We've got Julie Ertz, Lindsay Horan, Rose Lavelle, Katarina Macario. Let's start with Julie Ertz. We already talked about her briefly, but she is carrying that injury. Do you think we see much of her in the group stage? Will we see her like as a substitute for the first game, or do we see her maybe rested for the knockout round?
That's the big question right
now. That's the big one.
I do think if you bring her on into this tournament, right? I think it's important to establish some sort of minutes within the group stage. So I don't know. Against, you know, the first game against Sweden, they're a good team and a team that the U.S. have seemed to be playing in every single tournament over the last, gosh, I can't even tell you how many major tournaments they've faced Sweden in.
All of them.
Yep.
Every single time.
I don't know if you bring her into that situation unless the game calls for it. Like if they're up and it's a comfortable lead, maybe you bring her in there. But because of the intensity of that Sweden-US matchup, I don't know if that would be something to bring her in at the end of the game. But I do think if that's the case, you need to get her maybe 45 in the second game. And whether that's her starting and knowing that you're going to have to make a substitution at halftime and then trying to get a little bit more in the last game. I don't know what that looks like, but I would say if Julie Ertz is going to be who we know Julie Ertz to be, let's get her some minutes in maybe even all three of these games. I would say the first one, barring the situation, maybe you bring her in for the last 20, 25.
So who then do you think starts in her place in that? And it is her place, that role. But yeah. Who do you think starts as that number six if it's not going to be Julie Ertz?
I think you play a midfield of Sam Mewis, Lindsay Horan, and am I crazy to think Christy Mewis?
I mean, they have the connection, the sister connection.
The sister connection.
They also have the very good player connection, yeah, but sister connection most important.
Yeah, so I say those three because I like Sam Mewis can play in the six and Lindsay Horan can play in the six.
Yep.
Christy Mewis, she can play a little bit, a little bit more high, especially in attack. But I think that there is some stability there with both Horan and Sam Mewis to play in the six and they can switch, right? It doesn't have to be just one covering that space. There can be some fluidity into who's attacking and covering each other through there. Which could be interesting when you're talking about this Sweden team. Maybe it looks a little bit different than they've played against before. So that's kind of, that's not one answer. It's like a Horan and Mewis answer combined.
No, I think that makes sense because maybe that is the combination you need to cover for Julie Ertz.
Yeah.
She's just that good. I was writing down your response. I wanted to go back to Christy Mewis for a moment just to make sure I didn't miss too much there. What is the sort of like, what are her biggest strengths that she brings into this team? She is, I think when they named the original roster when it was only 18 players, she would have been the only new addition, the only new name from that World Cup squad. Why is she in this position? How did she get to be in a place where she might be starting that opening game of the Olympics?
Another really cool story. Had been out of the team for a number of years, then finds her way back in it really through 2020 in the Challenge Cup and her performance with the Houston Dash over last season and this season. She got an opportunity to come into the U.S. women's team, I believe, at the beginning of this year, maybe the end of last year, probably the end of last year in some camps. Sorry, I don't know that specific date. But what's also key when you're talking about the Olympic roster, Taylor, and you just mentioned it, right? It's always been 18. 18 is a hard number to get a team and pick the right players. And one of the things you have to do is you have to pick players who are performing. And that's, we'll get into this with like some of the players in the forward group, but Christy Mewis has been performing game in and game out. And whether it's, you know, on the stat sheet with a goal or an assist with Houston Dash, but it's her movement off the ball. It's her ability on the dribble to get out players. It's her left foot. She really reads space well. So with this U.S. team, I mentioned their ability to recognize where players in front of them are occupying space and, pull the team apart in that space that then they've created from those runs in front. And I feel like Christy Mewis isn't afraid to get to the end line in the channel, even as a central midfielder. Just if she reads where Tobin Heath is or where Kristen Press is. And so I think that's really important is she's come into this team and she's not only scored goals in big moments, which is important, But she's created a chemistry with these players, and it made it really easy for them to bring her in and her to feel like she fits in right away.
And then with the idea that we have Rose Lavelle and Katarina Macario to be those impact attacking substitutes or players you bring on if you just want to maybe kill the game off with passing and possession.
Yeah, well, and I think there's a lot of, they're not super similar players, but I think there are some similarities between Christy Mewis and Rose Lavelle. And who knows, like Rose Lavelle probably might start this game, right? I don't know if it's going to be Christy Mewis or it's going to be Rose Lavelle. But
We're going with what you would like to see.
Yeah, Jordan. I would like
so that,
to see
that's
that.
Totally fine.
Well, Rose Lavelle has shown that she can be an impact player on this women's national team. And so I do think that there are going to be games that she starts because of the quick succession of games. But she can come in and she's really intelligent and she has slaloming runs on the dribble when players are tired, and she can break down teams with slip passes or just straight beast mode on her own. And then, yeah, you can bring in Katarina Macario, who can play a few different positions. I think she could play on the wing too, if needed, or in that number nine spot, if they need a third number nine, which is down the depth chart, which hopefully isn't the case. But yeah, she's an interesting player and a new player to this group. She was a standout at Stanford. And really, when I was calling college soccer games, I was just hoping and praying that she would sign with the U.S. Women's National Team and decide her alliance was going to be to us and not Brazil. And luckily that's the case. And I think this could be, you know, you never know who's going to be the player who just comes and shows up. And if she has opportunities coming into games now that she's a member of the full squad of 22 players, she can be that impact player. She's so creative on the ball, and it could be a good coming out party for her.
And in that attacking line, we've got Tobin Heath, Carly Lloyd, Kristen Press, Alex Morgan, Megan Rapinoe, and Lynn Williams. Hmm. Again, not a ton of surprises, a lot of known quantities, a lot of caps between them. Yeah. I think the number was something like the average cap was 111, the average number of caps, that is.
Jeez.
The average age was around 30 years. So it's a very experienced team. You've got tons of goals. You've got tons of talent. Jordan, for you again, what would you like to see the United States do against Sweden in that opener?
Oh, gosh.
There really are so many.
There's so many combinations.
You can't really go wrong.
Yeah.
It's mostly about like what do you think gives you the best chemistry and the best ability to break down Sweden.
Yeah. I think you play Kristen Press and... Gosh. Well, the thing is, Kristen Press has had, in her last 37 games with the U.S. Women's National Team, she's been a part of 37 goals. Like, that is absolutely ridiculous, either a goal or assist in all those games that I've mentioned. Absolutely ridiculous stat. And when you talk about playing a hot player, like, that's what you need to do. She is on fire right now. I think you continue that and just allow her to get at players right away. I would go, and I don't know if this really works with how they want to set up, but I think you play her, and I just am not comfortable yet with Tobin Heath and where she's at in her recovery, and maybe it gives her a little bit more time because we just saw her at the last send-off series get some minutes in. But I would say Kristen Press, Megan Rapinoe, and I'm actually going to go with Carly Lloyd.
Let's talk about Carly Lloyd,
okay.
Because she was, as you said, I think at the beginning, a player we weren't even sure would be on the Olympic roster last time mm-hmm. round. For her to be there this time is even more impressive at 39 years of age, I think that happened 3 days ago. But still, like was not maybe one I would have put in there to be in the squad at all, let alone starting. But I'm with you. If you're bringing her in for that veteran experience and that ability to score goals in big moments... She has the most goals for this team. She seems like the one to do it. So it seems odd, but I think I'm with you for her starting.
And she has, she knows the Swedish team. She knows how they're going to play. She adds a little bit different runs, right, than Alex Morgan. Alex is going to probably stretch the back line a little bit more, which I feel like against Sweden might be more beneficial in later stages of the game. So maybe she comes in. If they're chasing or pushing for a goal, maybe she comes in later in the match. But then you take Carly off. Like, there are so many factors, right, that go into all these decisions. But Carly can drop into the midfield and almost play like a little bit of a false nine at times. And that just meaning that she turns into more of a playmaker with runners going in front of her. And she can use some of those midfield tendencies that she's had throughout a lot of her career into being in that number nine spot. But she's also good under pressure, right? And when you're trying to set a tone in the Olympics with it being a short tournament and the U.S. trying to, you know, probably playing their toughest opponent in this first game against Sweden, I think that you might just want to have a player who, well, gosh, she just relishes those moments. She just shows up every time there is a big moment. It's Carly Lloyd meeting it face on, saying, all right, I'll take this. I'll do something wild here. So I think that you go with Carly Lloyd.
And if you had to predict one of these players as winning the Golden Boot for top scorer, would it be Carly Lloyd or would you go somewhere else?
Ooh. Oh, gosh.
Your co-host on MLS Assist, Joe Lowry, does not like making specific predictions or predictions at all. Ryan Bailey loves to force him into them, so I'm doing the same to you
by
asking for your Golden Boot pick.
Gosh, that's a great question. I kind of feel like with how good, I'm going to go with Kristen Press. I just feel like she's done so well lately. I can't not say it. You know, I want to pick a midfielder. For some reason, I want to pick Sam Mewis.
Interesting.
I feel like just the way that this U.S. team attacks the channels and their ability to get across in, like they're going to push teams back so deep that ball to the top of the box or that late run might be on more than we think. And so I want to say Sam Mewis, but no, my gut's saying Kristen Press.
And I'm assuming we'll see some goals off of set pieces, or that's been the case in the past. I think of this team as being pretty clever when it comes to set pieces. There's always that possibility for master set piece theater or for sort of designed plays. Julie Ertz seems to do a lot of different things, including just making other defenders uncomfortable. Yeah. How big of a role do you expect set pieces to play for this team?
Gosh, I mean, I know this was the summer of own goals, but some of them came off of set pieces. I think set pieces are always crucial in tournaments because games are tight and set pieces can be a moment where some teams really tune in and focus well and some teams don't. And it can just take a half second of losing your mark and the ball being played into that specific place and you're down a goal. So I do think set pieces will play a role. I don't know if it'll play as big of a role as just run of play goals for this U.S. team because they are so good and fluid and aggressive and have the capability to beat you in the run of play.
All right. And in the U.S.'s group, we've got Sweden, New Zealand, and Australia. Sweden is at 4:30 Eastern, 4:30 in the morning Eastern on July 21st. Oof. New Zealand at 7:30 in the morning on July 24th. And Australia again at 4 a.m. on July 27th. Jordan, which of those opponents do you think will be the biggest challenge or where might the U.S. struggle the most? And who do you think will present the least amount of challenge? I know it will be competitive across the board. We're not writing anybody off. We're not expecting any sort of 13-0 wins in the group stage, or at least I am not. But who do you think finishes? I wouldn't say like who finishes top or whatever like that, but just who do you think gives the U.S. the most to think about, and who do you think the U.S. is able to get by with relative ease?
Yeah, it's a pretty tough group when you think about it. Australia has been on the up and up over the last few years, and I think a lot of that has had to do with just players from Australia doing this back and forth between NWSL and their Australian league, some going to Europe as well. But they've really developed into a nation. When you're talking about the 2019 World Cup, people were thinking that they could be one of those pushing for semifinals, the final even at moments. So I do think Australia is going to be challenging. It's interesting too. I think just with the way the world was in the last year and a half, we haven't seen a lot of these international teams as much as we normally do with U.S. Women's national team. So there is a little bit more of a mystery as to like how they're going to play, but they have Tony Gustafsson, who is a former U.S. assistant coach. He was with the team in 2019 when they won the World Cup. Now he coaches Australia, and this guy is a mastermind. So this Australian team is going to have some really good, solid tactics. I think when you look at this group, your first inclination is to think Sweden will give the U.S. a tough job, or a tough game, which they will. Mm-hmm. I mean, they're Sweden. It's going to be a good game between those two teams. But I do think that the game against Australia is going to be the most intriguing tactically. And that can mean, you know, a 2-0 win for the U.S. still. Or it could mean a really good back and forth battle where each team creates opportunities, probably scores a couple of chances. So I would say that's probably going to be the match I'm looking forward to the most. And then New Zealand have some good pieces, but I don't think that they're going to be able to hang with the other teams in this group.
And are you planning to be up at 4:30 in the morning for that first game?
Gosh. I'm going to try. That's all I can do, right? I can try.
It's all you can do.
Yeah,
you can try.
I might be
you
up,
try.
Taylor. Just can I stay up is the question. Can I stay up for the 90 minutes and then get myself back into sleep before we chat about it? Because we're going to chat about it, right?
We are. I used to watch them, like, these games, early morning games on. And I know, like, West Coast listeners, I know you have it worse. we know that. We talk about this a lot when it comes to the Premier League, that complaining about a 7 a.m. kickoff to a West Coast team to wake up at 4 a.m. is not going to go well. But I will say, watching, if you try to, like, watch in your couch or a comfortable chair, you're falling right back asleep. Oh. That's why I have to sit, like, at my desk in front of the computer with a cup of coffee. Ooh. Otherwise, I will fall asleep.
But
if we do, we are going to record a little bit later. We're not going to record immediately after the game. We're going to give some time to watch it in a more comfortable way, maybe rewatch a little bit. And then it will be myself, Jordan, and I believe Joe Lowry is going to join us to break down that USA-Sweden game on Wednesday. But for now, Jordan, thank you very much for taking the time to break down this roster, to talk a little bit about the team, a little bit about your needs. That's good. Right. That's good to know. And it really does have me excited to root for Casey Krueger and hope that she gets some minutes. But for now, thank you very much for bringing all the knowledge today.
Thanks for having me, Taylor. And not only are we talking soccer tactics, we're talking how to watch soccer tactics as well. So you get everything here on the Total Soccer
One-stop
Show.
One-stop shop. That's what we're going for. Listeners, thank you all so much for listening. I hope you all enjoyed, and we will talk to you all again soon.